Welcome. You're listening to With a Splash of Jesus, where your host, Jordan, explores real and sometimes difficult conversations that will empower you to create a safe space for not only yourself, but for those around you. Here's this week's episode of With a Splash of Jesus. We hope that you enjoy. This episode comes with a trigger warning. Topics of suicide, anxiety, mental health, and loss of a child may be discussed. If this is triggering to you, we highly recommend skipping over this episode.
Hey friends, we are here with Lisa Stoltzfus. Lisa is a new friend of mine. We connected at church and through some mutual friends. Guys, she has such an amazing story to share. I am so excited for you to hear it. What are you currently reading in the Bible?
All right. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on here, Jordan. I'm so excited. Currently, I was reading through chapter 1 of Job this morning. Through this, I have just had such a journey of like trial and tribulation. And truth be told, I am not in the Word nearly as much as I need to be. And I'm well aware of that as I'm new into motherhood and just the busyness of life. Unfortunately, that is something I feel like has taken the back burner, even though I know it shouldn't. But in preparation for the podcast, I really started to dive in and look into Job. Job 121 was one of my favorite verses just through this whole process. And I really was diving into what was referencing and just those ideas of adversity and what Job was going through and how he continued to praise God in all of it, in everything that he struggled with, that he continued to just praise God. And so that's something that I was really inspired by. And especially as we go into this conversation today, to just really look into the suffering and the divine justice just through Job.
So while you were reading it with a fresh perspective this morning, what was God teaching you in that?
Yeah. So I think that, again, hindsight and everything that I've been through, and we're going to dive into that more, but I think that in the good, it's really easy to praise God in all the good things that we're going through. And truth be told, it's just a little bit harder when you're walking through the valley to be able to still praise him in the storm. And so I was just really inspired by his story and just reading through that. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at today. So
I love that. And also, I want to totally encourage you. Like, I think more people are not good at reading their Bible every single day than they'll like admit. So yeah. I applaud you for your vulnerability.
Well,
in that.
I just wanted to be honest because, again, like I said, I think it's easy to get up here and just say, hey, this is what I do. But in all reality, it's not something that I'm as great at as I wish I would be. So
amen to that. So what's currently on your nightstand?
So actually, this goes along with my reading process. I am not a great reader in general. I wish I loved reading. I'm great at buying books and I'm not great at finishing books. So currently, truth be told, in my, you know, early stages of motherhood that I'm in right now, other than like my baby monitor and some nursing pads, I'm like, I don't have a whole lot on my nightstand other than that. So books wise, I'm just not really into anything right now, unfortunately.
That's okay. This season will pass. So what is something that you are so passionate about, you can't stop talking about it?
Currently, I would say my daughter. I'm fresh into motherhood as she just turned 4 months. And as we're going to dive into a bit more, the IVF process was a big part of our story. And there's been a lot of instances lately where I've been able to be a resource for others walking through infertility and specifically looking into the IVF process. And so that actually has been something very relevant right now that I'm just really passionate about sharing more of that, whether it be through this podcast, through several relationships that I've just started kind of, you know, navigating through with that. And so I just love to be a resource and an encouragement for others. And so I'm hopeful that can be what this is as well today.
Awesome. Well, on that topic, let's get started. So like you have mentioned, you've walked a really long and hard road to get to where you are today. Can you tell us a little bit about your story?
Yeah. So my husband, Carl, and I, we have been lifelong friends. Actually, our moms lived across the hallway from one another in apartments before they were married to our dads. And so we've been family friends since we were babies, and we got married in April of 2015. I was currently living in Nashville, Tennessee at the time, and we did long distance for a time, and then I moved back here to Goshen. And when you know, when we started our family as the two of us, we kind of assumed that it'd be pretty easy to start having kids. And so in my mind, I wanted to make sure that we were absolutely ready whenever that day would come, that we were had all our ducks in a row.
But are your ducks ever in a row? Like, let's be honest.
No, absolutely not. No, absolutely. But we, you know, in our mind, we had that illusion that we would have all these things set up and everything ready, and we better, you know, be ready in that way, because when we start trying, it's going to happen immediately. And I actually had been going, I was supposed to go on a trip that June. We started trying in January of 2017. And that June, I was supposed to be going on a trip. And I remember buying like the absolute best trip insurance. And it was like, you know, I'm going to book my flight, but I'm actually not going because I'm for sure going to be pregnant by then. And in all reality, the trip came and went. I went on the trip to Peru and I was still not pregnant. And over the time, you know, a year passed. And that's kind of the guideline they give you, especially at that age. I was in my 20s at that point. But, you know, they say try a year and then you can start seeking kind of medical intervention at that point. But for us, we had been trying for a year until we went to a fertility clinic. And even doing that, you know, that gave me so much more hope that, okay, this is it. Like, all we need to do is, like, you know, they're going to help us figure out what's going on here. And so we started seeing a fertility doctor in January or February of 2018. And then, you know, he wasn't able to find anything through our test results that would indicate there would be anything wrong with either of us, essentially, which was encouraging and discouraging at the same time, because especially looking back now, I think so many people think like, okay, well, what's wrong? Like, why aren't you able to get pregnant? And there's not a reason necessarily, you know what I mean? We haven't been able to necessarily like pinpoint that. And so sometimes in the journey, I wished that there would have been something specifically wrong, that it was like, okay, it's this, and we just need to fix that. And so we did the testing and all of that, and everything came back great. And so for my husband and I, that's kind of where we started our first road of like being on opposite pages. And he, in his mind, he's like, well, they told us there's nothing wrong. We're just not being patient enough. And for me, as we dug into it, that desire just kept growing stronger and stronger and stronger to be able to have a child. And so we started the IUI process in June of 2018. And that, again, so hopeful. And then immediately like rug ripped out from under us as that didn't work. And so we navigated that. And then that next month, we were going to start another cycle and do the same process again. And that was the month that I turned 30. And there was something about turning 30 that just felt like a milestone that, you know, like I should have babies by now. Like I'm married, you know, we've been together, you know, I should have a bigger family by now. And so turning 30 was like, that was really hard, because I went into that cycle and was not able to do any fertility treatment that month because of having cysts that month because of medication from the prior cycle. And so it just felt like the whole process felt like a slap in the face, but then it was like one more thing, you know? And so, yeah, that was my 30th birthday. And then we had some travel and that sort of thing. And so we went into our second IUI that September. And unfortunately, that did not work as well. And our doctor had told us that with the IUI process, essentially, if you try it three times and it doesn't work any of those three times, that statistically speaking, it will not work for you. And so after our second IUI failed that September, I was just at the point where I was like, I wasn't even that surprised at that point. I remember I didn't even cry afterwards, because it was like, okay, this is just our new normal. And that was just really hard. But I just wanted to try to remain hopeful in the whole process, in a way that we knew that that third IUI was kind of like our last, it felt like our last chance. And so I kept pushing it off, you know, and as people would ask like, okay, so what are your next steps? And I'd say, well, we've got one more chance for another IUI. And then that felt like after that, it was going to be nothing. And so that was a lot to work through as well. And so that December, our IUI was scheduled for Christmas Day, which was the one day that the clinic was closed. So they bumped it up and they said to come in for the procedure on Christmas Eve. And so we felt like it was this super special divine thing that, you know, that we would be able to like have this opportunity and on Christmas Eve. And it just felt so incredible. And so we went down and we did all of our treatments at that time in Fort Wayne. And we were really hopeful after that. Like it was just really, it felt like that could have been it. So if you're in any sort of fertility process at all, like, you know, there's always the 2 week wait. And so for us, the 2 week wait, we went over New Year's and New Year's Day came and there's always something fresh and new about the new year that, that makes you feel like you're starting over. And so I remember at that point, I had not ever shared publicly anything about our journey. There was even, you know, some close friends and family that didn't know that we had walked this. Because at that time, I truthfully had believed and Satan wanted me to believe that I hadn't suffered long enough to be able to share my story. In my mind, I thought, well, you know, we've been trying for 2 years, but you know, there's some people that have been trying for 8 years. Like, who am I to share my story? Who am I to be someone to like put a face and, you know, to be in this community? And so that January, as we were still in the 2 week wait of, you know, finding out if we were going to be pregnant or not, I just remember thinking, okay, I'm going to share because if I don't share at this point, then no one will ever know what we walked through in this valley. And if I just share that I'm pregnant, then I feel like it discounts like all that hurt. So on January 1st, I remember I like typed out this super long like Facebook post and shared, and the outpouring of support and just like the need from so many people to like hear that someone else was walking through that was just incredible. And the people I felt like were coming out of the woodwork of just, you know, like I'm walking through that too, but we haven't even told anyone yet. Like I just felt like, wow, it just felt like this immense pressure of like, okay, like there's a need to be a support in this community. And on January 5th, just a few days later, I took my pregnancy test and it was positive. And so, I mean, we were obviously beyond thrilled. This was the first time that I'd ever been pregnant. And we felt like, okay, this was it. And then of course, all the feelings of doubt and just the imposter syndrome came flooding in of, you know, who were you to share? Why did you share that you were walking through this? Because now all these people that are coming to you and want to meet up for coffee or like have support through their infertility journey, suddenly you're going to have to tell them that you're pregnant. And it was like the enemy just wanted me to think, like, steal that joy in that moment and say, like, who are you to share? Like, and it was such a mixture of emotion. But again, ultimately we were thrilled to be pregnant. And then we went for our first ultrasound at the end of January, and unfortunately there was no heartbeat. And that was just a whole nother thing to grieve. Obviously, walking through the journey of infertility was just so much. And it felt like each and every month was something to grieve. And it was really something where I feel like at that moment when we actually had a loss, a physical loss, that was kind of the first time that I felt like I had permission from like an outsider standpoint to grieve, because infertility is such a silent thing that, you know, so many people don't understand. And fortunately they don't understand, but it just felt like, you know, again, having a physical loss, like felt like I was finally like validated in my feelings of hurt and loss over the last like several years. And so I went and I ended up having a DNC, and that was a whole nother thing that I had to work through, as that was my first procedure I was ever like under anesthesia for. And everything just felt like nothing went according to my plan, which when does it in life? But it felt like one more thing that just couldn't go my way. And it just, again, that was a lot to work through. And so that was all early 2018. And then that year we ended up doing our fourth IUI, which at that point, again, like I said earlier, our doctor had said, try it 3 times. If it doesn't work, then it's not going to work. But at that point, our doctor said, well, it did work the 3rd time. You just had a miscarriage. And so we decided to try it in June of that year of 2018, and we didn't tell anyone. And we thought, okay, this could be the time that we get a chance. I like to say in quotes, like normal people get to tell their friends and family on their time. They get to keep that to a secret, their secret of being pregnant, you know, for however long they decide to. Because that's another thing I feel like you're just robbed of in this journey is that, you know, when you're in that 2 week wait and your friends and family that you're so fortunate to have praying for you, they all know when you're going to find out if you're pregnant or not. And so it's one of those things where even that, like, even if I tried to keep it to myself, I remember one time my sister, I told her, I said, I'm not going to tell anybody if it works or if it doesn't work. And then she talked to me on the phone and she knew I'd be finding out and I didn't say anything. And she's like, I knew it didn't work because she could tell just how I was talking that even without saying. And so we decided, okay, we're going to like, this would be a great way to surprise everyone. And unfortunately that failed as well. And so that just, again, we kind of felt like, all right, well, what now? At that point in time, we really weren't interested or even looking into the IVF process at all. We had definitely looked at and discussed options for adoption. Like, we just really just longed to be pregnant, longed to have a family in general, obviously longing to be pregnant as well, but just really wanting ultimately to be able to grow our family in whatever way. And I just remember too, during that time, especially praying like, Lord, whatever you plan you have for us in this process, whether it be adoption, whether it be further fertility treatments, whether it be conceiving naturally, whatever it may be, just like make that abundantly clear and just guide us and direct us through that process. Because none of those decisions are easy decisions or easy conversations. And that's just a lot to work through in and of itself. So as we worked through just the grieving of that, what would have been my due date would have been September 17th of that 2019 of that year. And I just remember thinking, okay, my goal was to be pregnant by my due date. Like, that would help ease the pain. And of course, my due date came and went and I had nothing physically to show from a child or a baby standpoint. And so we moved into 2020. And then, as we know, pretty much the whole world shut down. And during that time, you know, I feel like there's so many times where conversations start that the Lord has prompted people or put people in your life to you know, kind of initiate something. And so during that time, I had several people reaching out to me, just like mentioning this specific doctor and mentioning endometriosis. And I had never heard endometriosis at all in any of this process or in anything at all during my journey. And I decided, I was like, you know what? It's worth a shot. Like, I'm just going to go talk to this doctor, go see. And for my first appointment, he immediately was like, we're scheduling your surgery ASAP. So it was August of 2020. And I had surgery to remove my endometriosis that, again, I didn't even know I had from prior. But that was another thing that just felt hopeful, but also felt like, you know, one of those things that I had several people along the journey that said, hey, I had the surgery. And then the next month I was pregnant. And I'm like, okay, this is it. Like, this is like the rock that we haven't like turned over yet. Like, this is it. And so we had the surgery in, like I said, in August of 2020, and time passed and more time passed. And while I was thankful that I had the surgery because it, you know, helped with quality of life in other ways, still no baby. And so we were just going into early 2021, and actually it was our first Sunday at Restore. And that's obviously how we connected and we met, you and I. But Carl and I had started going to Restore for the first time, and we had just had the most wonderful day. It was one of those things that we had a great day. We went to like our niece and nephew's basketball game after church. Like, it was just like one of those really good days. And then that night we sat down and we were kind of discussing things because our doctor that we had met with was doing kind of a 6 month follow-up of like, okay, now what are we going to do? Like, what are our next steps now that we've done surgery? Still no baby. Again, I feel like those conversations that happen separately and privately can just really be powerful when you come together. But Carl and I both felt like prompted by the Lord, just again, completely separately, that maybe the IVF process was something that we wanted to explore. Like I said earlier, that was just never something that was on our radar. That was in my mind, that was always like, whoa, like that's like, You know, it felt like a desperate measure, which, I mean, when you get to that point, you get to that point. But we just really like talked and came together, and just, I felt like, okay, this has got to be it. Because that conversation, him and I just being so connected, so on the same page, it just felt like it had to be from the Lord. Because to be honest, like, there's been so many conversations in the whole journey that don't feel like we're on the same page, or just we got to those points at different times. And so to come together at that moment with the same idea or the same thought, and that we hadn't talked about it previously, like, I just really felt like that was the Lord bringing us together in that. And so we just talked to our current fertility clinic and we started that process of just exploring what that might look like. And by June of 2021, then I had my first IVF egg retrieval. And so again, super hopeful, all the things. And so we did that. And then that August of 2021, I had my first IVF transfer. And unfortunately, I miscarried that baby as well. And so that was also really hard because we knew everything down to the fact that it was a boy. You know, like we knew all the things. And the due date for that baby was going to be my mom's birthday on May 11th. And so it was just when we found out that I was pregnant and all these things, like it just felt again like, okay, this is it. Like this is the time. Like how special, like sharing a birthday with it, you know, the baby with his grandma and like all these things. And in all reality, it just felt like, again, just getting stripped all those things, all those hopes and dreams getting stripped away. And so we took a break. Our clinic, you know, said, hey, you can, you know, jump right into your next transfer if you'd like. And at that point, I really wanted to do further testing, see, okay, why am I able at this point? You know, I've been able to get pregnant. Why am I not staying pregnant? And so in the meantime, I talked to a good friend that had gone to an IVF clinic in Colorado. And I thought, okay, this seems crazy, but why not? Like this whole thing seems crazy, but here we are. And so I actually called out there and we went to the clinic. It is one of the top 10 clinics in the US. And so I called out there, spoke with one of the doctors. And by that January, we were going out for testing and they were just incredible to work with. And by April of 2022, then I had my first egg retrieval out there. And I just, again, all the dates coming together. I'm such a dates person. Like I love the significance of all those things. And so I had my egg retrieval on our 8th wedding anniversary. And so it just felt like, okay, this is something special too, you know? And then we ended up having our transfer that August 1st on my dad's birthday. Again, all the dates. And that is our sweet and precious daughter, Caroline, that was just born April 2nd on Palm Sunday. So again, that's like my husband and I joke. I always say long story short, but it's really like long story long with how I share. But that's kind of the gist or the cliff notes of everything that we've walked through for the last like 6.5 years or so.
So 6.5 years is a long time. And there's a lot of waiting in those steps. So what are some of the things that the Lord taught you in the middle of your seasons of waiting?
So I feel like that changed a lot at different times. There'd be times where I just felt so hopeful and I felt like, okay, this is part of my story. And I just want to be an encouragement to others. There was other times where I was just angry and jealous and bitter. And, you know, it's hard because infertility and loss just bring out, unfortunately, some of the ugliest sides of a lot of people's hearts. I can speak to mine specifically, but you know, I'd see a pregnancy announcement online and it was just like, I mean, it sounds awful to say, but just even feelings of like, they haven't suffered long enough to be pregnant. Like they haven't gone through what I've gone through. And so it's been a constant lesson through the process. But my big thing that I always come back to is that there is always hope and that is something that the Lord taught me each and every step of the way and that there's beauty in the waiting. And I don't know if you're familiar with the butterfly story at all. So I love this story and I reference it often, but I also love that every time I see butterflies, I think of this. But basically the story just talks about how there was a man that found a butterfly that was starting to hatch from his cocoon and he was watching the butterfly and it was struggling to come out of its cocoon. And so he decided to help the process and just cut it out of its cocoon. And he took a scissors and cut it out. And as the butterfly emerged, he had a swollen body and it's small and it's shriveled up wings. And the man didn't think anything of it, but he sat there waiting for the wings to enlarge and to be able to fly, but it never happened. And so the butterfly spent the rest of its life unable to fly and it was crawling around with small wings and a swollen body. And despite the man's kind heart, he didn't understand that by restricting the cocoon and the struggle that the butterfly needed to get itself out. And so the gist of it is that God uses those moments of struggle to be able to help us to emerge and to be able to become who we are through the suffering and through the struggle, like through the struggle of getting out of the cocoon. Those moments can be used to help us create, you know, who we are created to be. And so I'm just always so encouraged whenever I see a butterfly. And of course, after I heard the story, butterflies were everywhere. Every time on my way to an appointment or when I was sitting on my porch, just like processing things. And so just the idea that, you know, this is all part of my story and that I can encourage others through that. And so, like I said, going back to just that there's always hope. And so I just want to always serve as a reminder that, you know, even in the hard, even in the valley, even in just those unthinkable, difficult times, that there is always hope.
I really appreciate that you said that the loss of a child or infertility can bring out like the ugliness in someone. I know I can speak to that with the loss of children. And so do you have any advice for couples struggling with infertility or having lost a child that really helped you and Carl?
I mean, from a faith standpoint, I definitely think that leaning into your spouse as you lean into Christ together, having that open communication of your desires, your expectations, you know, sometimes I know grief can sneak up in just the most, you know, offset ways, but just, you know, even sometimes where I might lash out and then later go back and just say like, I'm sorry, like I'm really struggling today. Like it's a due date or it's this happened or I saw someone who was pregnant at Walmart or like, you know, just something in your face. To be able to communicate those things to one another is really, really important in that process. And then I think from like on a medical side viewpoint, just that I would just say to advocate for yourself. Whether you're doing any sort of medical intervention or not, just to be able to advocate for yourself, look into options and testing if that's something that you decide to pursue. But I feel like, unfortunately, I didn't feel like in the process that I always had the best care, and that just made things like even more difficult. And so, you know, just to advocate for yourself in whatever capacity needed, you know, we ended up switching clinics and doctors, you know, whether that even be like getting yourself into therapy, just advocate for yourself in whatever way you need to, because you're worth that. So that would be probably some of my advice for couples in general.
You mentioned, you know, like, oh, I'm struggling because it's a due date. And that's not something that men think about. Like, I know for me, like when I had gotten pregnant with Corbin after we had lost Hudson, I was like, oh, I'm pregnant with Corbin, but I should be 20 weeks with Hudson. Yeah. And it's like, how do you walk that? And men don't like, they don't understand.
Yeah. I think they're just a lot easier to like separate those things. Yeah. Like, and I think women, I mean, we're just wired to maybe be a little bit more emotional and to be a little bit more like feelings driven. I know my husband would say that's the case for me for sure. But I think that, yeah, those are just really hard things to walk through, like the what should have been or what could have been or what would have been. And that's, I think of that all the time with the babies that I've lost.
Yeah. On that same note, like, do you have any advice for the men specifically walking through this? Like, how do you support your wife in this? How do you be a good spouse when your wife might be angry or upset or not giving her full, like 100% all the time?
So I think it's important too to recognize that it's hard for men as well. I think so often the focus is the woman. And in general, I feel like that is probably who feels the brunt of it. But I think that it is hard for men. And I think that they don't always acknowledge their own feelings in that. I know for my husband, when he was able to talk to another husband that they had walked through loss, they were walking through infertility. And he was like, that conversation was just, it was so good to be able to hear someone else's perspective and for some other man just to say like, yeah, this really sucks, you know, instead of just hearing it from your wife. And even hearing another husband say, gosh, I don't know what to do for my wife. Like, I want to fix it, but I can't, you know? And I think as men, they want to fix it and they want to, you know, find a solution for the problem. And this is one thing where you feel like you just can't. And so they just feel hopeless in that. And so I think even just men in general, trying to, I know it's not something they love to talk about, but just to be able to talk to and connect with other men. But in regards to supporting your spouse, I just think it's important to know that there are so many layers to dealing with infertility for a woman. I know as women, it often feels like that's the one thing that we're supposed to be able to do is like bear a child, you know? And that for me, I felt like so much guilt of like, what if I can't do this for my husband? And fortunately, he never, ever put that pressure on me. You know, he made it abundantly clear that, you know, that's something, yes, that we desire, but that is not what makes him love me. And he is going to love me regardless of what I'm able to do as far as that goes. And whether I'm able to get pregnant, stay pregnant, deliver a baby, that he loves me endlessly. And he, you know, wouldn't change that whether I'm able to have a baby or not. And I also think it's important just to say that whether there's medication involved or not, I know medication gets kind of the, you know, it's easy to fall into the like hormones and all, like if you're on any of that, like to, you know, that is a whole nother layer of emotion, but just the layers of feelings in general of there's just a lot to process for women, again, for both sides, but just, I would encourage the men to extend a lot of grace and patience and just to support them, you know, support their spouse in any way possible, because I know that goes just a long way and to be able to support them.
You had mentioned earlier having expectations. And so what have you learned about having expectations during your waiting period? And what kind of advice do you have about releasing those expectations?
We all know the meaning of expectations, or I feel like we all, you know, get the gist of it. But in preparing for this, I actually looked up the definition of expectations, and it's defined as a strong belief that something will happen or be the case in the future. And I hadn't really thought of it. I mean, I've heard the word expectations. I understand expectations. But I think that's the really, really hard thing with expectations is just not knowing if something will happen. It's easy. I said, for me, you know, I never imagined not being able to conceive a child naturally. And it was never a thought in my mind until it quickly became my reality. But I think that when our expectations are not met, in a lot of ways, it's really, really humbling. It gives us new perspective. I think it gives us empathy towards others walking that road as well. For me, I took what was one of the hardest situations in my life and decided that I was going to use it for good. And, you know, even being able to speak like this today, but just to serve as an encouragement for others. I mean, I would never, you know, I feel like hindsight, I wouldn't want to say, yeah, let's struggle with this for, you know, for 6+ years. Like, let's do that. But looking back, the beautiful relationships that I've been able to start and just see those flourish and grow, and just that connection that I've had with other women and that Carl and I have had with other couples has just been like such a beautiful thing. And so I just think that it's, again, hindsight, but I feel like looking back, it's easy just to say that those are such beautiful moments. But I think in the wait, I tried to do a decent job of releasing some of those expectations, but it's hard because when it's such a strong desire, it's just still there, you know? And I think the Lord gives us those desires for a reason. And he gave me the desire to be a mom. And so that was something that I didn't want to let go of that. But I also knew that I need to probably release some of the expectations of how it takes to get to that point, you know? And so that was something that I had to work through.
For our listeners, and I'm sure there are quite a few of them who might be listening to this who have struggled, who have not struggled with infertility or have not lost a child, but they know someone who is, what can you offer them as practical ways that they can be there for a friend?
I think that my simple explanation of that is just to try to avoid the phrase, at least. I know that it's easy to say, and I know that we've all done it, but when it comes to loss and infertility, it's truly uncomfortable for everyone. And it's easy to want to make, you know, others feel better or to look on the bright side, but saying things like, at least, you know, you can get pregnant, or at least it was early in regards to a miscarriage, or at least, you know, XYZ. A lot of times it can just truly feel like to the person receiving that you're discounting everything that they're going through. So I feel like as a general rule, just try to avoid saying at least. But practical things for sure, as far as acknowledging their hurt, is just by mentioning their loss on, you know, maybe a random day or a hard day that, you know, like Mother's Day or Father's Day or due dates. I think the big thing is that people don't want to bring up the hurt or the loss in any way. But in all reality, when you're walking that, you're thinking about it all the time. And so by someone bringing it up, you know, don't assume that, oh, if I bring it up, like I'm going to make them really sad because, you know, maybe they're not thinking about it, because in all reality, they probably are thinking about it. And so by having someone acknowledge it and just, you know, maybe a random time just feels like validation of like, okay, I matter. My loss matters. You know, my baby matters, you know, all these things. And so I think just acknowledging that, and then I also just think practical ways of, you know, if someone shares with you what their due date is, or you see, you know, that they were supposed to be due a certain month or something like that, you know, jot that down in your calendar and acknowledge that. Acknowledge that to them, because I know that goes a long, long way. I've had people do it for me. I've done it for others. And I think it's just, again, we just want to feel validated in those feelings and in that heart. And so I think by just doing that, if someone has lost a baby and they named that baby, like, call that baby by name. Again, we're thinking of those things all the time. It's not something that you're, you know, you're bringing up and all of a sudden, like, we're like, oh, I forgot about that. Like, that's just, that's not the reality. And so I think that that's a big thing, is just really acknowledging that hurt. And I think another thing too is just, I know people are so well-intending with their questions and their thoughts and their concerns and recommendations, but it's just one of those things where, you know, hearing that something, you know, especially in the infertility world, hearing that something worked for your mom's neighbor's sister's aunt and she got pregnant because she tried that does not always feel like a great thing. I know, like I said, I know people mean so well, and they, when there's that hardship, they want to fix it. Like, we just want to fix it. They want to know what's wrong and they want to fix it. And I think that's just humans in general. But the hard thing about infertility is that it's not a one size fits all. It is not something that, you know, something might work for someone and they got pregnant, and then the next person tries the exact same thing and there's not success. So I think that's the big thing, is that just, it's not a one size fits all. And so that's just a hard thing. But I think in general, if you're not sure what to say, just say, this really sucks and I'm sorry. Like, that's, you know, it's okay. You don't have to have the solution. You don't have to have the answers. You don't have to have, you know, the perfect words to say. I think sometimes just letting people sit in that sadness and just grieve is a really beautiful thing. You know, if you just sit with someone and don't even say anything, but you're just there with them, like, that can just go so long, go so far, and just be a huge thing in that process. So
I think it's important to, like, as Christians, for us to, like, a way to be the hands and feet of Jesus is to sit in that uncomfortability.
And it is.
So often, like you said, like, it's hard because you're like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. I want to fix it. But, like, being in the hands and feet of Jesus is truly just, like, sitting in it with them, yeah, and just like, hey, what's on your mind? What's, yeah, on your heart? And, yeah, letting them talk and not, yeah, trying to change the subject.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with that.
Infertility and loss can really mess with your mental health. Like I said, I didn't go through infertility, but I went through loss, and I can speak to that firsthand. What are some scriptures that you would give someone who is also struggling for them to, like, really cling to?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, Job 121 is one that my sister has walked through loss as well. And that was one that when she brought up to me, I actually painted it on a sign for my niece. And I feel like Job 121, and then another favorite is James 1:17, as well as Romans 5:3-5. And I think it's one of those things too, like, there's so many great resources out there and just, you know, devotionals and different things. But it's one of those things where it's so, again, I mentioned earlier, I'm not always great about just diving into the word with that. But I think that, you know, even a quick Google search of, like, scripture that is tied to loss or heartache or suffering, like, there's a lot out there, you know? And so it's one of those things where, you know, the Bible is definitely more relevant than sometimes I think we assume. And so, and just, you know, being real with that. And so, yeah, I think those are a few that I just wanted to mention.
I love that. Now that you have Caroline and you're very open about, like, your journey through IVF and infertility and loss, what are some of the things that you hope to teach Caroline in this process?
Yeah, I've actually thought through this, because I think it's even one of those things where, you know, now that, you know, everybody knows that she was conceived through IVF, obviously that's something that I knew all along that I would share with her. But it is just an interesting, like, concept, I feel like, for, you know, a young person to wrap their mind around. And so I don't know when we'll have, you know, that specific conversation with her, but my hope and prayer is that she always knows how deeply loved and desired that she was by her father and I, and that not only by us, but by the army of prayer warriors and just all over the world. I mean, we've had so many people just in our corner praying for her and cheering us on along the way, and just that she provided so much hope for us during the most hopeless times. I think that was in the back of my head all along, was like, this is going to be worth it someday. Like, I, and whether I believed it every time I said it or not, that was another thing, but I just wanted to so firmly believe that like this was going to happen and that just every ounce of pain and suffering that we went through was worth it for her to get to that point because it brought us to her and it brought us together and that her life is a story of hope, you know, that she would just be an encouragement and serve as a reminder to others that she, you know, there is hope and that when others look at her, they, you know, they think of our story and they see that in her and know that, wow, she was so desired and loved and prayed for and there is always hope.
Well, with you as her mama, I have no doubt she'll believe those things. If you could sit down and have coffee with your younger self, like before you walked through all of this, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh, goodness. I wish that I could tell Lisa, six and a half, 7 years ago, just so many things. Truthfully, I wish that I would have just extended myself more grace. I think hindsight, the easy answer is to say, you know, we should just jump to the Colorado intervention right away and going out there for IVF. I think that's the easy answer is to say, oh, we should have just done that from day one and we would have had her sooner. We would have been, you know, years behind or years forward in this. But in all reality, the, you know, just each and every step of the way brought Carl and I closer together, strengthened our faith. And I'm so thankful for the years that it was just Carl and I. I wish that, you know, I knew at the time, like, okay, soak these years in because it's going to change immensely if or when we're blessed with a child. But just, you know, trying to remember and enjoy those times that it was just us traveling or spontaneous date nights or sleeping in or whatever it may be to just enjoy those moments in the wait. And like I said, just extending that grace to myself and giving myself more of an opportunity to like grieve through some of those things. I think so often I wanted to, you know, show up in ways just to let people know that I was fine. Like, and even when I wasn't. And so, you know, for me, and I've been very honest with a lot of people about this, that, you know, baby dedication on Mother's Day was always a really, really hard thing for me. I showed up year after year after year on Mother's Day, watching other families dedicate their babies. And through the encouragement of others walking through infertility as well, it kind of gave me permission that, you know, if that's a Sunday that I need to stay home, then that's just the reality. And so I think that just extending that grace, I wish I would have done that sooner. I forced myself to show up with a smile on my face because that's what I felt like I needed to do. But when I finally towards the end of those years, just to be able to say, you know what, it's okay. Like if I can't go, or if I have to say no to a baby shower, like I don't have to feel that guilt. Like I'm walking through this and surely those that love me and care about me will understand. And if they don't, then they don't. And so I think that just extending grace to yourself in that journey is just so, so important. So that would be my advice with that.
And watching you dedicate Caroline on Mother's Day had me weeping.
Oh, yeah. Truth be told, I had a lot of reservations and a lot of like, just a lot of hard feelings about that. Carl was one that really was like, yeah, like we're going to do this. Like we're going to do this on Mother's Day. We're, you know, and I think that for so long, because Mother's Day was such a hard thing for me, that I struggled to even dedicate her on Mother's Day, because I really looked at it and said, you know what, like I have my baby here and I'm so thankful and I'm, you know, I'm here to celebrate her and dedicate her to the Lord. And I'm so glad that I'm, you know, considered a mother earthside. But all those years that I was a mom without my baby in my arms was obviously still very fresh in my mind. And I pray that those feelings never leave me, because it gives me an empathy towards others walking through that. But I felt just that feeling of, okay, I'm thankful that I have this, but there's so many others that I know are looking at us right now. And I hope that they feel filled with hope knowing our story and seeing her, but knowing that they don't have their baby in their arms. And that I feel very conflicted now being on this side of infertility and infertility and loss, because in all reality, like those feelings, you know, haven't just gone away. And so I think, I don't know, it's just, it's really a hard, complex thing that I've tried to work through, is like, I belong to that club for so long. And now that I'm out of that club, but I still feel like I'm a member in some ways, like it's just, it's a hard thing. And I've talked to others that are in the same position and they feel very similar. And so, you know, babies after loss, or, you know, babies after infertility, it's just, you're so, so grateful, but you're also like, I remember how that felt. And so that's just such a hard thing.
Well, and I mean, if we're being completely honest, I don't know if you live in this, but I have talked to a lot of people who do that. Like, you feel like you're constantly holding your breath because you suffered so much loss. You're constantly in a, like, not a state of panic, but almost where you're just like, but what if?
Yeah.
But what if?
Yeah. It's so hard because it was, for me, it was being able to get pregnant, and then it was being able to, okay, can I stay pregnant? And then after that, it's like, okay, now she's here. And then it's like, oh my word, now think of all the things that can kind of go wrong. And so I feel like it's a daily just surrender of like, Lord, she is yours. Protect her. Like, you know how much we love her, like protect her. And yes. And yeah, just protecting her in that. And so that's, again, a whole nother thing to work through now that she's actually here.
Well, I can't let you leave here without asking you to talk about your other baby, so to speak. So tell us about Mustard Seed Marketplace.
The Mustard Seed Marketplace, I started, it's an ethical boutique. We started in August of 2017. And when I created it, it was just out of our milk house in our barn on our farm in Goshen. And then I would do markets and that sort of thing and was online with my website. But we have been now in the mill in Middlebury for almost 4 years. And actually this month we are celebrating 6 years since we started, since the mustard seed was created. And so I work with over 40 different groups in 18 plus countries that we're just creating a marketplace for them, for the artisans around the globe. And so we've got jewelry and clothing and handbags and just candles and soaps and giftables and all that sort of thing. And so that has been such a blessing to me in this whole process because, for so long, it was my only baby. And then it became a healing thing for me as I lost my babies. And then as now I have Caroline, it's just such a sweet thing. Just the connections that I've made through the shop and just that whole community of women that just, you know, people that I don't even know, you know, personally praying for us and just encouraging us. And so that's about the mustard seed. So you can find us online or we are also, like I said, in the mill in Middlebury, our storefront. So,
well, guys, I highly recommend you check it out. It's incredible. I love going in there and I always spend too much money. So to kind of start wrapping us up here, do you have any books, resources, Instagram accounts that have been helpful to you related to infertility, walking through loss?
I shared earlier, when it comes to books, I'm great at buying them. I'm not always great at reading them, but I was gifted a book several years ago by another mom who walked through infertility and loss and actually went through the IVF process as well. But she sent me a book called Dancing Upon Barren Land. And I actually just wanted to read like a brief little snippet out of it that really spoke to and encouraged me in the journey. But in the book, it just shares, I thought I could choreograph the dance steps, but I realized the ordered steps of this barren road have not been a dance of my own choosing. Instead, it has been a dance I didn't want to learn. And the journey is one of misunderstanding too, especially because I am a born-again Christian. I know God loves me, yet I still find myself from time to time asking the question, why God, why? I wish I had the answers to all the questions, but I don't. Even though I don't understand the why, I do know the who. The who is God, and He's the lead dance partner of life. And I just think that that is just, again, such a good reminder that as we're walking this journey, it's not going to always make sense, but we know who we can always lean on and go back to as we just mourn and walk through this process and this journey. So I think there's a lot of great books. If you're into books, there's podcasts, you know, all the things that talk specifically about loss or infertility or whatever process you may be in. And I think the big thing for as far as resources go, this is going to seem kind of silly, but I feel like the more that you are open and transparent about your journey, I know it's not for everyone to share and be vulnerable in that way, but for me, the more that I opened up and talked to others about my journey, resources and connections just kind of kept falling in my lap. So many things along the way were, you know, from the doctor that did my surgery for endometriosis to the clinic in Colorado to, you know, a number of things were all because of connections that I had with other women in my community that were a wealth of knowledge and wanted to share that. But it was like, I needed to like ask for it essentially. and share. And again, I know that it kind of contradicts a little bit earlier of what I said about, you know, not everybody wants advice when they're in the thick of it. But I think when you're open to receiving those things and you can kind of seek out advice and that sort of thing. As far as like Facebook groups or any of that, one account that I have absolutely loved following is Waiting for Baby Bird. And that is one that has a community of over 12,000 women. It's a faith-based group. And Alicia shares, and she's just, I've heard her speak at conferences. Like, she's just absolutely amazing. And having that community, I remember when I joined that Facebook group, like having that community of women, it was like, okay, like I'm not the only one. And that felt amazing. And we actually had a local conference here in Goshen. And I just remember, like, I've been to other women's conferences before. And, you know, you hear those moments where they're sharing and people are sharing their struggles. And, you know, you're kind of like, okay, we all connect over the fact that we are struggling through something, but we're all probably struggling with something different. Maybe it's loss. Maybe it's your marriage. Maybe it's your job. Like, there's a number of things. But I just remember being in a room filled with women who were all mourning and grieving through, you know, the desire for a child and not know if that would happen was one of the most beautiful things. Anyway, all that to say, I think ultimately plugging in to anyone that you know locally that you can become friends with. And then sometimes it's those people online that you're able to connect with through those groups to be able to have, you know, a virtual best friend through all of this, that you don't have to walk through that alone. And I think that's the big thing, is just to try to find those resources and connections. And it's uncomfortable at times, and not everyone's story is exactly the same, but I think that just to have that community around you is just so, so important, because again, I think that Satan wants us to just suffer alone in that. And he wants us to believe that like we haven't suffered long enough to even share that we're struggling with that. And so that is something that I'm really passionate about, is just like connecting yourself with other women and, you know, even other couples that are walking through that as well.
I think infertility and loss of children is such a silenced topic in, especially in the church. And so I know for CJ and I, like when we lost our child, we were given a hope box. I don't know if you're familiar with them.
Yeah. Was it through Hope Mommies?
Yes.
Yes. Oh, they're an amazing organization.
Yeah. And so for us, anytime we see someone that's lost a child, we gift them a hope box. And so for us, it's our way of like, hey, we see you in this, and we see you in your grief and your loss, and you're not in this alone. And so I think that's just another way you can show up for people.
Hope Mommies is an amazing organization that, we've been involved with in a number of ways, but they're great.
Yeah. So is there anything else that we haven't covered? I know it's a really sensitive topic that, you know, you want to say before we close out.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I really just want to go back to thanking you for just using your platform in this way to bring awareness and a voice to something that, you know, so many couples struggle with, but it's not something that everyone talks about, as we said. And the more that we bring attention to topics like loss and infertility, I think the less like taboo it feels. And so I think that I found, like I said, sharing my story, that, you know, the community that surrounds you in that is just so, so amazing. And I hope that for anybody walking in that journey, that they're able to find connections and just not feel alone. But I just think that, ultimately, like, I just want to, you know, kind of going back to, like I said, about the IVF process, my big thing is that just truly what a miracle life is, and what, how much of a miracle each and every single one of us is. And while I wouldn't wish the, you know, the journey that we went on with, you know, that we went through on anyone, I think that in a lot of ways, I'm very fortunate and blessed that I was able to see literally a front row seat at the conception of life, and to get, you know, from the moment that she was itty, itty, bitty, you know, and then on into being born. I will never regret that. And so I think just knowing that truly we are all created in God's image and we are all just such miracles is just such a huge thing. One thing that I just heard the other day, and I just thought this rang so true, was that it may be painful, but it doesn't have to be shameful. And that, I mean, I don't always love like cheesy lines, but that was one that was easy for me to remember, that I just think that there's so much shame a lot of times wrapped up in that, especially, like I said, for women, just feeling that guilt of, this is something that I'm supposed to be able to do and I maybe can't. But I just think that it's important for us to know that, again, that you're not alone, and that nothing is wasted. And there's beauty in the waiting, and there's beauty just in all those moments in the valley and seeing those and just trying to cling to that hope that there is just, there's beauty in it all.
Well, at the end of every episode, we do some rapid fire questions. So let's get started on those. So what is your go-to coffee order?
Okay, so I'm a weirdo. Going to any coffee shop actually stresses me out unless I know exactly what I want. And I feel like that even is seasonal. So my easy answer is just a white chocolate peppermint mocha. But half the time, I don't know what anything is on the menu. I feel like I'm five walking in somewhere and I'm like, I don't know. Tell me what the latte. I don't know what that is. It's awful. So I feel like every time I go in, it's a mess. So anyway, that's my go-to. Sometimes even in the summer as a white chocolate peppermint mocha, because I know that I like it.
Hey, it's easy. You're not complex and you're not spending $500 ordering one coffee. So what's the last thing you watched on TV?
Honestly, I feel like I cannot even remember the last time that I finished a show start to finish. I don't know. Unfortunately, I feel like I like just stupid TV where it's like, I don't know, the Kardashians or something. I'm like, it's just mindless and I have it on the background, like while I'm working on something and Caroline's taking a nap. So I don't know that, or I don't know, something on Netflix probably. I like a lot of true crime stuff, unfortunately. So same. That's just a weird thing I went to school for criminal justice and I've just always been very fascinated by anything like true crime related. So I feel like if there's like a documentary out or something like that, I'm all about it.
Got a couple you can watch. I'll tell you later. If someone wrote a book about your life, what would the title be?
I actually asked my husband and he had several ideas for me, but we settled on long story short and then in parentheses, long story long, because like I said earlier, I mean, everything I say, it's like, oh, long story short. And then it ends up being the longest explanation. So that would probably be my like 1,000-page memoir.
I love it. If our guests want to follow you or connect with you, where can they find you?
So you can find me on Instagram at Lisa K. Stoltzfus. And I do have my account set as private since I had my daughter, but I'm always happy to, you know, talk to people through messaging or anything, Facebook as well. And yeah, happy to be a resource or connect or encourage people in any way.
And they can come find you at the mill.
Yes. Yeah. Or you can find us at the Mustard Seed Marketplace. So that's, yeah, my other account, but...
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for joining us. I have loved just giving you the opportunity to share your voice. And I pray for our listeners that they just feel really seen and loved through this episode.
Yeah, thank you. I hope that as well. So thank you again for having me.
Awesome. We've loved having you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of With a Splash of Jesus. If you enjoyed this episode and would like to support the podcast further, please subscribe, share with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you have a story you want to share, please reach out to us on Instagram. We hope you're encouraged and challenged by this ministry. We here at With a Splash of Jesus are praying that you can take action today and make a splash wherever you are at.